Well, John, it's a nice day in Ohio, huh?
It's a beautiful day.
tell me, how's Halloween in Ohio? I guess it's kind of crispy, usually.
Well, it's crispy and clear, but I can tell you this. I'm in Athens, Ohio, which is the home of Ohio University. And one of the things I'm noted for is a Halloween party in the street that draws anywhere from 20 to 30,000 kids every year. The Halloween here is loud and noisy. And
they all come in costume?
Most of them do. They come from all over. I mean, it's amazing. They come from all over, and they sleep in their cars in the fairgrounds parking lot and all that kind of stuff. And the entire streets basically in downtown Athens are roped off at night, and they just...
Well, we don't have to worry about any ghosts, a lot of crowds, or do we? Do ghosts show up in crowds?
Well, you know, I don't know, but what happens is invariably the kids end up going to some of the places in Athens that are rumored to be haunted, such as the Ridges, which is an old mental asylum here.
Well, the setting sounds perfect already.
Oh, it is perfect, yes.
Tell me about this place.
The Ridges?
Yeah.
Well, that's actually on the cover of my book, Ghost Hunting Ohio, and it's a beautiful old building, actually several buildings set up on a ridge overlooking the river. It looks gothic, you know, you see towers rising above the trees at night. I mean, it's great for that. But there's been a lot of activity going on. Most of the buildings are shut down. They were built around 1860 or so. They've been closed down. But in one of them particularly, some artists, art students, have their private studios and workspaces up there. And they're literally on wards that are, they simply move the furniture out, move the students in, so they're actually painting in art in patients' rooms and that kind of thing.
Well, that ought to be conducive to bringing back a ghost.
Well, you know, they work there all times. I mean, they're there late at night, and I've had several of them that have...
John, before we go any further, does this have a long drive up to the place, or is it right on the street?
Up the hill, so...
Okay, it sets the scene before you get up there.
It does. Like I say, you have to drive up this ridge, you know, and on top of the ridge are all these big brooding buildings. It's like, you know, Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's something right out of a B horror movie.
And you get the moon coming up behind it, and you're all set. but the students there have seen shadowy figures in the hallways. One guy actually went into the men's restroom. When he walked into the door, as he walked in the doorway, there was a big mirror facing him. He saw his reflection in the mirror, but he also saw down the other side, the other end of the mirror, it was a long mirror, another guy wearing like a coat and a hat and all this stuff. But there was nobody else in the men's room. There was only one way in and out. This guy was standing in the doorway, this art student. And he walked in anyway, and there was nobody else in there, but there were two people reflected in the mirror.
Wow. And did he tell you, or have you heard about what the other reflection looked like? Was it a contemporary person, or?
Well, he described it as being not contemporary, but not too old, like maybe early turn of the century, or a person dressed maybe like in clothing of the 1920s or something like that. But I know a group did an exploration in the building and actually invited me to come along, a ghost hunters group out of Columbus, as you mentioned before. And they recorded some EVPs, electronic voice phenomena. They had some tape recorders they left in different areas in the basement of this building. There was nobody down there. When they played them back, they did get some voices on there, at least it sounds like voices, saying things like, you know, we're trapped here, get us out, those kinds of things. I don't remember exactly what they were word for word. Interesting thing.
Yeah, you mentioned that that recording about the ghost voice entity shouting out for help, we're trapped, whatever. I've heard that before. You've been a ghost hunter for some time, or a ghost watcher, or how do you like to describe yourself?
Actually, as a ghost writer.
Okay.
I mean, primarily, I am a writer. I've written other books before the ghost books that have nothing to do with ghost hunting. In fact, I teach writing at Ohio University, so I'm definitely a writer. But I've had, you know, a layman's interest in sort of the ghost lore, if you want to call it that. But I've only been doing this almost full time the last 2 or 3 years as I've been writing this series of books that I've written.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost Hunting Ohio came out last year. Ghost Hunting Illinois came out like literally 3 weeks ago. and I'm working on another one to come out in the fall.
And is it set in the same area, or do you go to another state?
Ghost Hunters is going to be national in scope.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it'll have, adventures from all across the country. And then I'll go back to doing the states again, which will primarily be Midwest states. The publisher is interested in doing what they call the Haunted Heartland, so we'll be doing more of the Midwest states. But next year will be national.
A couple of things come to mind when we talk about that, about Mid-America. It seems to be a lot of ghost lore from Chicago on down to Ohio, back even into our part of the country in Oklahoma. We have the spook lights and the ghost lights up and by Miami that appear for no reason at all, up on the corner by Missouri, and Arkansas and Oklahoma and Kansas, a four-state area. There are a lot of ghost stories in the Midwest, and when you see pumpkins and Halloween pictures, usually it's an autumn scene, obviously someplace like the Midwest. Not that the East and the West Coast don't have their ghosts, they do. But, Afera Yudoza she actually is from Turkey, which now she lives in New York on our staff. She was talking to me yesterday about her theory about ghosts, and she basically said, I think they're trapped in between realities. And she looks upon her adventures in haunted houses as an effort to try to free them. What do you think about that?
That's a pretty common belief, that's something, we're passing on from here, flesh and blood existence, to somewhere else, and that somewhere in between it might be possible to, get stuck or get lost. I think of it as sort of being like a bus station, and getting on the wrong bus, and you're kind of waiting now for the right one to get you to the right place. And I think that's true. I mean, that's sort of what I think happens, is that somewhere. I don't know what the afterlife really is, and nobody does, of course. But I think there is one, and I think that somewhere between here and there, we make a transition, we make a progression. And it's possible to get stuck in some ways, or lost. I mean, some people think that, ghosts are simply spirits that can't accept the reality of being dead, or better still, don't even understand that they are dead. Now they need to move on to another place.
Yeah, there has to be something, because not everyone, I don't think, ends up being a ghost.
That's right. I mean, if that's the case, I'm sure we'd have them all.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be everywhere, and we wouldn't have haunted houses, and your book wouldn't sell or anything. More ghosts in Illinois than Ohio, or about the same?
Well, I think there were more stories in Illinois, and I think that's, again, perhaps just a factor of population,
Sure.
More people than Ohio generally, but a lot of my stories did come from the Chicago area because it is a heavy population.
And there's lots of ghost stories, the haunted cemetery with the gangsters and all of that kind of stuff. You hear all kinds of stories.
A lot of Al Capone related stories and the other mobsters as well, because they created a lot of ghosts.
Well, they certainly did. That was one of the byproducts of their job. Now, when you go out and do these things, you just talk to people, right? And do research. Or do you actually go out and spend the night in a haunted house?
It's a little bit of both. First of all, I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. I don't claim to have any particular sensitivities to ghosts like some people have. So my primary way of working is to find a place that has some history to it, some people talking about it as being a haunted place. I will go there, and I will spend as much time as I can there, and I will talk to the people that have had experiences at that place, get their stories, and simply record them. I'm not trying to debunk anything. I'm also not saying, hey, yeah, this is it. Ghosts are everywhere. I just set it out and let people make up, their own mind. I don't do any of the types of investigations that you see on television, like with all the heavy electronic gadgetry and all.
But you have dealt with recording ghost voices, because I've heard some.
And I have teamed up. I mean, different groups who do this kind of stuff have invited me along. on different investigations, and I've gone along with them to see how they work and, you know, to get sort of their perspective on it, because they're approaching it from a little bit different point of view than I am. But it's not me. I don't own anything outside of a little handheld tape recorder that I use for my business anyway, and a camera. You know, that's pretty much, I'm pretty traditional and sort of simple when it comes to doing it.
Well, in many ways, that's probably the best way. Yeah, it's simple and direct. You get the. I mean, it has to be there, or you wouldn't even notice it. As a reporter, and I've been a reporter all my life, you're a writer, very similar. I'm a writer to some extent. Not, I don't write books like you do, because that's a job. I mean, it's tough. I find people sometimes want to tell you the story and get the word out. Sometimes they don't. How about ghosts?
You know, the funny thing about that is that people are much more open about this and more willing to talk about it than I would have ever guessed before I started the project. And actually, I had been a reporter for a while with the Cincinnati Inquirer, so I know some of that. And you're right. Some people are very, you know, they don't want to talk about it. You have to try to pry them open. But for whatever reason, with the ghost stories, when I talk to people, they are very forthcoming. I have had hardly anybody not allow me to use their names in my book. I use first and last names of people, you know, their real names, and I tell them that I'm going to use their names unless they don't want me to, in which case I'll invent a name, but I'll put a little asterisk near it so the reader knows.
Yeah.
But I have had probably, in both these books, I've probably had only maybe two people ask me not to use their real names. Everybody else says, sure, go ahead. And they tell me their stories. And funny thing is, a lot of people say to me, I don't know why I'm telling you this. I've never told this to anybody else before. So I'm not sure. Maybe I have a magic wand or a way of opening them up. I don't know.
Well, that's a good attribute. The Cincinnati Inquirer is a good paper. And your college, your university is a good place, so you have good credentials, my man.
Well, I hope so.
Now, let's talk a little bit about these ghost stories. Anything just, you know, right off the top of your head really jump out at you as being, well, for lack of a better word, scary?
Absolutely. Probably my best story that I have personally is a place called the Collingwood Art Center, which is in Toledo, Ohio. And it used to be a Catholic school, a Catholic college, staffed by Ursuline nuns. And it's a big, beautiful, Romanesque-style building. It's just gorgeous. But the order, after a few years, you know, some of the sisters passed on, and they weren't getting new ones to join. So they eventually had to close the college because they couldn't staff it anymore. And the nuns that were left moved off into retirement homes. The building fell into disrepair. It really became a derelict. But after a while, a nonprofit arts organization in Toledo made a deal with the city where for a very nominal fee they'd rent it if they rehabbed it. So they did that. And now the artists that are there have their studios in this building, and they live there as well. I went there because they had said, and now the artists that are there have their studios in this building, and they live there as well. I went there because they had said there was something they were calling Shadow Man, which was in the basement.
Shadow Man?
That's good.
Not Batman, not Superman, it was Shadow Man. And I talked to the artists about it. I talked to several separately, and each one had the same story about this black, human-like figure that they would see in the halls of the basement and sometimes coming up the stairs from the basement onto the main floor. One artist in particular said that he opened the door to those stairs to go downstairs, and just as he opened it, he said whatever it was like right on the stairs in the process of rushing up and literally run right through him, he said. He said he just felt like electric and cold, and it just passed right through. So,
yeah, you hear that a lot about the supernatural, the whiffs of cold air or exceptionally warm air.
Right, and sometimes this sort of electric kind of charge.
So this happened to him?
Happened to him, and then I was down in the basement. As I said, I'm not a particularly, I don't call myself sensitive or anything, but I was in a long passageway of the basement where the lights were out. They were supposed to be there, but they just weren't working, they weren't functioning. So I was walking down the hall in the dark, and that didn't really bother me, but all of a sudden in the hallway, I just hit, I don't know how to explain, I kind of hit a patch of what seemed like dense air, almost like I was, almost like in water. It felt like I was swimming, you know, that kind of resistance that you get. And at the same time that I felt that, I also had a real strong feeling of sort of anxiety and kind of depression at the same time. And I am neither anxious nor depressive, trust me. but anyway, so I had this feeling, and I just sort of pushed through it and kept walking, and then I was out of it again within a matter of a few feet. So it was like I had walked in and out of something, through something. It was just a very strange.
Some sort of zone.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the artists, I told them what happened, and they were saying, well, that was an area where they said they had seen this shadow. And I didn't see it. But it was just a very strange feeling.
Yeah, over my career seeking the big story, I've gotten myself into positions where in the middle of the night I would suddenly realize I probably shouldn't have been there, you know. And so I've often wondered, looking back on these experiences, whether or not you're sensing something or it's something psychological anyway, because we all have this innate fear, I think, of the supernatural.
I think that's true. And I think you could put yourself in a state of mind, in a condition where things can happen to you. And I wonder, too, if it's only imagination, or if somehow you can even maybe mentally arrange things in a way, if you know that.
Yeah, I've often wondered that. That's a good possible thing. We think of reporters meeting somebody in the middle of the night, giving them a tip, like in the movies. Very seldom happens that way. Usually somebody calls you early in the morning, wakes you up. It's been my experience. And you're groggy and you don't really remember all the story. And you keep saying, wow, why didn't I ask him that or this? Well, I'm almost coming to the conclusion that perhaps if there are ghosts in the supernatural, that maybe they're crying out for help. And in other words, they want a little attention. And so you go someplace like where you were, they might set up that zone so you can walk through it.
And the other part is, are different people receptive in different ways or have different abilities to perceive that? You know, certainly I've met people in the last couple of years who will walk into a room together and they'll stop and say, oh, I can sense spirits here. I can feel them. I can see them moving around. And I'm standing there going,
I don't feel anything, right. I have that happen a lot when I deal with psychics and things like that.
And I mean, there's fakes in every business, every industry, and I think there's some there too. But I mean, there's some people that I.
Yeah, and some of these people I really like, so I hate to think they're faking. You know, but they may be fooling themselves. Then again, it may be real. It's just one of those things you don't know.
Right, and I don't know how we ever will know until we're there ourselves.
And we'll know. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, here again, if we go back to these ghosts, if they're trapped and keep coming through the same place, maybe they don't know either.
That's true, yeah. Trapped in this.
All right, have you ever heard of anybody being killed by a ghost? I mean, I guess they could be terrified enough to have a heart attack.
Right. I think that's possible. I mean, I think you could be, you know, perhaps frightened enough by an experience, but I've never heard of anybody actually physically being.
I haven't either. And you know, even and I've done countless shows on the subject, at the same time, I have a good friend, Rosemary Guiley, who works for Fave Magazine. Yeah. Rosemary spent time in houses by herself in the middle of... I wouldn't do that. She's a good-looking woman, but I don't know if I want to be alone with her. My point is... We are attracted to the subject, everyone, or, this year's TV season's full of shows like this. And these movies have always made money.
I think it's human nature to be attracted to that subject simply because it talks about, any way that you want to look at it, it talks about eternity. It talks about an eternal life. I mean, if ghosts exist, that means that something happens beyond death. And, I mean, I think we're all very curious about that, and I think we all want to have hope that, you know, we don't simply get rolled into a hole someplace and that's it.
Yeah, that's one of the secrets of religion, and all sorts of religions in my mind, is that the human spirit and the human psyche just does not want to accept that you might be here and then you're gone.
Right, and I think belief in ghosts is the same thing. It may not be a religious thing.
Yeah, but it's similar, is what I'm talking about. And even the Bible talks about ghosts.
Right, of course. So I think that's what it's all about.
Your next book, you're just collecting the stories, and then you're going to write it all about them in The Nation?
Well, the next one, Ghost Hunters, will have a combination of things. First of all, Ghost Hunting Illinois and Ghost Hunting Ohio, for each one of those books, they have about 36 places in them. And I went to all these places myself. You know, I checked them out. I talked to the people that were there. So I visited them all. And they're all places that are open to the public. I don't talk about Aunt Millie's garage being haunted because people can't go there. These are places where they can visit. But next year's book, Ghost Hunters, I do the same thing in that I'm visiting some places nationwide across the country. I'm investigating some places, a lot of times teaming up with some of these, you know, ghost groups, sometimes doing it on my own. But in between those types of chapters, I'm going to have subjects about just sort of other ghost things, if you will. For instance, buying haunted items on eBay. You know, you can go on eBay online and buy, you know, a haunted hat, a haunted cane, haunted dolls, you know, a ghost in a jar, you know.
Ghost in a jar, huh?
It's only $10.
There have been countless pieces of fiction written about haunted items that come into your life and screw you up.
Sure, you're paying good money to have your life screwed up. I can do that without paying.
That's right. I don't need any help, personally. But there's a whole industry besides just selling books and novels and films and DVDs and scary music. Now on eBay, people are the haunted cane. That's interesting. Does it get up and walk by itself?
Well, I mean, I remember reading about it was grandfather's cane or something, and it was sold. Some casino in Las Vegas bought it for like an astronomical sum, like $175,000 or something. The woman that posted it on there posted it because she said it was her father's cane, and that it was bothering her 6-year-old son. That somehow he was afraid of it because it was grandpa's cane, and grandpa's now dead. I mean, it was just a weird story. But she made a lot of money on that cane.
Yeah, maybe you and I are using our creative efforts in the wrong direction. Maybe we just need to create eBay ads.
That was kind of a strange thing. But you're right, there is a whole industry when you consider some of these ghost tours that are being offered. Almost every town now has at least a walking tour that you can take. Some of them have these big motor coach, you know, bus tours and...
Yeah, I was just on a ghost train down in Jefferson, Texas, and supposedly people appear on this little train. It's they still have a couple of miles of the track, and that's a series we have. It's coming right along with this one. The Most Haunted Town in Texas is the name of that show, and maybe you know, you might, who knows, you might end up there checking out some things. Let's talk a little bit of how this Ohio book was your first one. How long ago?
It came out in September of last year, September 2004.
And how long did it take you to put that together?
Well, it took me about, I live in Ohio, but it took me probably 6 or 7 months of traveling time around the state to visit the various places that I wrote about and do research, and probably another 5 months or so to write it. So it was all done like within a year.
Yeah, about a year's worth of sweat goes into these things. in labor, a labor of love, and then you got to kiss it goodbye and get ready for the next one. Haunted Illinois, haunted Ohio, now the haunted nation. Do you think the United States, I've always had the impression, I guess because of early movies, that most haunted places are mysterious places, like maybe, you know, the European areas, Yugoslavia, Transylvania. Yeah, right. I mean, I guess because of legend, they've been around longer. But there's plenty of Native American legends in America that are centered really around supernatural reactions. And how about cemeteries? Is that one of your locations you write about?
I write about cemeteries from time to time. I write about cemeteries that have, you know, something of a reputation to them. But despite sort of all the lore about cemeteries and ghosts in cemeteries, my feeling is that's probably not really a good place to find ghosts that much, because most ghosts seem to be in places where they were either happiest in life, place to come back to recall good memories, or a place where they actually died. Now, they don't actually die in the cemetery. If anything, a cemetery should be kind of the last place you would think. Who would want to come back and haunt the place where they're buried? You know what I mean? And yet, there are stories from cemeteries, of course, and people always are in cemeteries. But my experience has been that people see or experience ghosts far more in buildings and homes or, you know, public places or whatever than they actually do in cemeteries.
You know, I thought of this last night, walking my dog out in the dark, after talking with Farah about her ghost television show, and knowing that I was going to talk to you today, it was on my mind. You would think if ghosts are really trapped, in other words, they're people who didn't want to die, or didn't know how to die, or didn't know how to go on to the next place, that mortuaries would be full of ghosts. And maybe they don't want to talk about them because it'd be bad for business, but I don't hear a lot of morticians telling ghost stories. Now, we do have a haunted funeral home story from Indiana on our website, but basically you don't hear much.
No, you don't. I think that might be sort of, you know, what I'm saying is that I think that if you can choose or not, but if you are in a ghost state, or you come back as a ghost, or you are a ghost, however you want to phrase it, if you have that kind of sort of willpower to be a ghost, I think you're going to be someplace like, you know, your home or places like that. Especially if you're trapped and you don't want, and if you can't face the consequences of being dead or want to believe that, you're not going to be in a cemetery, you're not going to be in a mortuary, because that kind of proves, you know.
Yeah, you got a good point there. How about murder victims? You would think they would all come back and try to expose their killer, and they don't seem to.
No, I know. I'm trying to think. There was a case in West Virginia around 1880s, 1890s, where a woman's daughter was murdered, and they couldn't find the murderer. And the woman had dreams about her daughter. And her daughter basically, in these dreams, kept telling her she kept telling her who the murderer was in the dreams. And she said, you had to dig up my body, and that somehow there was some evidence on the body that would point to the murderer. And they did. They exhumed the body. And there was some physical evidence, I don't recall exactly what it was, that pinpointed her murderer. And in fact, they arrested this guy. He admitted the murder and was convicted. And this is a true story. It's a historical case of the only person who's ever been convicted of murder by the testimony of a ghost, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. But you would think that would be more common than it is. I mean, but there's a lot about this that we don't understand. I guess that's why we call it the supernatural.
Right. We're all guessing on this, you know, really.
Yeah, and I do think, looking at it intellectually, I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but if there's something to it, there's a healthy dose of the human psyche and our phobias and our fears and our conditioning to ghost stories and movies and everything else that play into this stuff.
Right. I mean, I think it's so difficult to even if we wanted to sort of, you know, sort out the truth and find out what's really happening. I think you're exactly right. We're soaked in this stuff from early age, you know, campfire ghost stories to movies to books, that I think it'd be very difficult to sort of, you know, strip all that stuff away and just try to approach things with a really open mind and, you know, totally clear mind, because we are sort of, we do have sort of preconceived notions about ghosts and hauntings and that kind of thing.
And I don't know, it's probably been done in a movie someplace. I haven't seen all the movies, but I always wanted to have a scene where you're in a dark, shadowy, spooky place, and you run up against an obvious ghost or monster, and he is taken back and says, "You scared the hell out of me." Kind of the reverse roles. Yeah, and I've often wondered that, how these ghosts in these haunted houses feel. You talked about public places, and there's almost every city has one or two or three. How they feel about people coming. They may be to the point where they just put on a good show now.
They know they're expected to do that, right? There's also talk, too, which you... The scenario you just laid out about that movie, I mean, there are people that do talk about ghosts having sort of reactions of being as startled, in a sense, by our presence as we are by theirs. Almost like two worlds sort of coming together at the same time there, and you know, both parties in both worlds being totally surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's maybe it might actually happen. I mean, if ghosts really don't understand that they're dead, if they think they're going about their normal business in their own home, doing their own thing, and they turn around and there's somebody standing in their kitchen,
yeah,
at the stove, and the person is dressed in outlandish clothes, you know, shorts and a t-shirt, what's that about?
This one. You know, what happened to these people? How come they dressed this way? We only have a couple of minutes left, Ray Fowler, up in New England one time, told me, and this is an interesting concept I hadn't thought about, but he kind of feels that there may be an element of time travel locked in with ghosts. And the reason he says that is he was in his haunted basement, and in the middle of the afternoon, and he heard a noise, and he turned around, and he swears he saw himself. And so, you know, like to be a psychological trick, or there may be something to that, too. Maybe another dimensional shift of some sort. We just don't know, do we?
No, we sure don't. Any questions?
But in the long and short of it, you're into your third ghost book.
Ghost Hunters will be out next fall. And Ghost Hunting Illinois and Ghost Hunting Ohio are both in print now. You can find, you know, if you live in Ohio or Illinois, you can find them in any bookstores. But otherwise, they are easily available on Amazon.com or any one of a dozen other internet.
Right on where our interview is on the website, we also have a link to get those books for you. You know, ghosts, do you think they're evil?
No, I don't. I've talked to people who are demonologists and believe in demons, but I think it's a different issue. I don't think we're talking about ghosts. We're talking about that.
Yeah, we do shows about demons. My own personal opinion is the demons are within us.
I think that's true. I agree. I don't think we need outside.
Right. Watch, they'll show up in my bedroom tonight. So you don't believe in us, huh? Okay, hey, I've enjoyed it, and we will be crossing our paths again, I'm sure, when the next book comes out, if not before. Okay, thank you very much. Bye.